You feel refreshed after the two tests?
Well, there's some bad news and some worse news regarding the test. How do you think you did as a class? What do you think your mean was? 70? 70 would be nice. The mean was 57. And so that's part of the bad news. The other part of the bad news is that my Tuesday-Thursday class kicked your ass. Theirs was 67, which is more about what it usually is. The worst news is that exam one, almost always for everyone, is the easiest one. So the class means for exams usually go down after the first one. Which means that hopefully some changes can be made. Now that's the mean I'm talking about. There's, as usual, there's a very wide range from very low score to pretty high. No one got 100. But there's some good scores in there. The mean, though, itself is what concerns me. So if you did not say what I said is the most important thing to do, which is to really hit the synchronized slideshows, do so for next time, because that's where the answers are, and that's the only place the answers are. That's where the questions come from directly. But anyway, I'll give those back to you, and I'll put the answers up. Just remember, you're not allowed to record those in any way, write them down or take a picture of them. But definitely, once I put them up there, check to make sure that Scantron machine didn't make a mistake. That happens sometimes. And also, any of them that you don't understand why you got wrong, discuss with me. Now to today's experiment. We're doing some tests of solutions today. It's often the case in science in general, not just biology, that you have, for whatever reason, solutions that you don't really know the contents of. And it would be nice to know the contents. In other words, whether or not a certain kind of chemical is in that mix. And there's a lot more kinds of tests that you can conduct than the three that we're looking at today. But we're doing three tests, specifically for important biological molecules. And so, what are the names of the tests? Do you remember from your...
Benedict's?
The Benedict's test. And that tests for the presence of what? Well, not all carbohydrates, because that's a huge set of molecules. Specifically monosaccharides, which are single sugars or small carbohydrates. Yeah, that's the Benedict's test. What else? What other test?
It was like the Izzy with like the, I think it was starches?
It's a K though, it's IKI. Yeah, by the way, IKI is not an acronym, as it looks like, since it's all caps. It's actually a chemical formula. So it stands for iodine potassium iodide, which is the stuff that's in the test solution. And you're right, that tests for starch, which is also carbohydrates, but it's starch is a polysaccharide, a large sugar made out of multiple monosaccharides hooked together. All right? By the way, why does it make sense for K to be the potassium symbol? Yeah, they're Latin or Greek. They use both. That's right. Another name for it is kalium. That's why it's K. And sodium is Na because that's natrium, for instance. Anyway, that's two of the tests. Both of those are carbohydrate tests, but they test for different kinds of carbohydrates. And then what's the third? The biuret, right. It's a word that looks like it should be buret, but it's actually biuret. And what does that test for? proteins, right. So there's other important biological molecules that we're going to be talking about in great detail starting with the next lecture, but for this lab, it's those three that we care about in these three tests. Now, these are qualitative tests as opposed to quantitative. In other words, they tell you whether, yes or no, something is present, but it doesn't tell you how much is there. It doesn't give you a number. That would be a quantitative test. But even though they're qualitative, you can tell relatively whether there is more in one than another, even without having numbers, because of the changes that take place. So all three of these tests rely on a visual change, so that you can, just using your eyes, tell whether it's a positive or a negative. All right? Now, two of these are pretty straightforward. The IKI test and the Bayourette test, pretty straightforward, and I'll just let you follow the instructions and do those. But the Benedict's test, even though it's straightforward to conduct, I want to just talk a little bit more about, to explain it molecularly, especially because what's going on in that test is an important process that we're going to talk a lot more about in lecture when we get to Unit 3, which is usually the hardest part of the course for most people. And that has to do, or that process is redox. Now, redox is a portmanteau, which is a single word that is two words combined, like spork, spoon and fork. The word redox is actually short for reduction / oxidation. Each of these is a process, reduction and oxidation, but it's good to put that into one word, redox, because that reminds you of the fact that if you have either of these things going on, reduction or oxidation, you have to have the other going on as well. In other words, you have nothing going on, you don't have redox, or you have both reduction and oxidation. Can't have one happening without the other. And that will make sense as soon as I define what it is. And the definition is a little bit confusing at first because it linguistically seems backwards. And that's because reduction as an everyday word we have in our mind as thinking you're losing something. Something is lost in reduction, right? Seemingly, like weight reduction, for instance. But in chemistry, reduction is the gain of an electron or one or more electrons, not the loss.
So then it kind of is a loss, but just the positivity of its electric effect.
That's right. This is exactly why the name actually does make sense, because think about what an electron is. If you gain an electron, your charge, your overall charge is becoming more negative, less positive, right? So numerically, it's going down. Your overall charge if you take on an additional negative electron. So make sense of it that way. That's good. But don't be confused by the fact that as far as material is concerned, you're actually gaining an electron if you're being reduced. Oxidation is exactly the opposite. It's the loss of an electron or more. And since electrons don't just pop into existence or disappear, this is why you can't have reduction without oxidation. You can't have oxidation without reduction. Because if something is being reduced by gaining an electron, that electron had to come from something that lost it, so at the same time something's being oxidized. Okay? Now, another part of the confusing terminology here is that in any given redox reaction, whatever it is that's being reduced can be called the oxidizing agent. And that's because if something is being reduced, it's causing, by receiving that electron, it is causing something else to be oxidized, to lose that electron. And that's why it's the oxidizing agent. It's not being oxidized. It's causing something else to be oxidized by being reduced itself. And conversely, whatever it is in a redox reaction that is being oxidized by losing an electron can be called the reducing agent. Because losing the electron means something else is going to be receiving it. Something else is going to be reduced. Any questions on the terminology there? Okay, now, we said a little bit ago that Benedict's test, which uses Benedict's reagent, as it's called, or Benedict's solution. That's the blue stuff back here, by the way. Before I forget, let me explain that this thing that's on this jar is called a repipetter. It's really just a pump, but you're used to like a shampoo pump pushing down. That's not what you do here. Don't mess with this. It's already set at 2 milliliters, so just keep it as is. But when you use this thing, just bring your empty test tube over. Make sure it's under the spout before you do anything so you won't spill it. But you just lift this whole barrel up until it stops. And then it might fall on its own, or you can gently push it down until it stops. That will deliver 2 milliliters into your test tube. But anyway, that blue stuff is Benedict's solution. And we said that this stuff tests for the presence of monosaccharides. So it doesn't test for a specific chemical. Glucose is just one of many monosaccharides. So glucose would be detected by it, but so would any other monosaccharide, fructose, for instance. Okay? Well, in the middle of page 48 is glucose. All of those structural formulas are glucose, but what I haven't really talked about yet, but we will upstairs eventually, is that any given monosaccharide can exist in either of two forms. The so-called linear form, because the carbon skeleton has two ends to it, like a line, or line segment really, or the ringed form. So the same molecule, the skeleton can wrap back on to itself and form another bond to form a ring. That's what's happening in the middle figure here. You have the linear version on the left. That's what you actually built with ball and stick models. But you can actually wrap it around back on itself and form the ringed version. And in solution, a monosaccharide will go back and forth between these two forms many times per second. All right? Polysaccharides. Well, before I get there, notice though that only when a monosaccharide is in the ringed form, I mean the linear form, the one you built, does it have a carbonyl group. And if you think of, you didn't actually build the ringed one, but if you had, you know, you started with a linear form, that was a complete molecule, so it didn't have any holes open in its model. If you're going to bring it around and attach it to itself, you're going to have to empty some holes to do that, right? And so, what's eliminated is one of the bonds in the double bond, the springs in your model, would have to be eliminated to make the ring. Notice in the ring form on that page, there is no carbonyl group. It's still glucose, but the ringed form does not have a carbonyl. Now, if you use monosaccharides, not as just keeping them as simple sugars, but instead use them as building blocks to make a polysaccharide. You have to hook the many monosaccharides together. To do that, you have to use monosaccharides in the ringed form, not the linear form. Okay? And so, a polysaccharide, even though it's a bunch of monosaccharides technically hooked together, all of them are in the ringed form, otherwise they wouldn't be able to be connected. And therefore, none of them has the carbonyl. Only individual monosaccharides have the carbonyl group. And that's why Benedict's solution works, because that carbonyl group is the source for the electron that's involved in the redox reaction that takes place. Now, what makes that stuff, before you add anything to it, look blue to our eyes is that it's really just an aqueous solution, water solvent, of copper ions. But not all elements form just one kind of ion. It's true for these first two groups, the ones I talked about in class, lithium, sodium, for instance, in group one, there's only one way that all of those will form an ion, and that is by losing exactly one electron to become a positive one ion, right? And the ones in group two, magnesium, for instance, will only make an ion by losing two electrons. But the metals that are in this region, some of them, not all of them, but some of them, these are the so-called transition metals, some of those are able to form more than one kind of ion. And copper is in that. Copper is Cu, right here. And there's two ways that copper can go from an atom to an ion. Well, if copper loses two electrons, it's going to be a copper 2 ion because it has a positive 2 charge, right, by losing two electrons. And so we would write that as Cu with a 2 plus superscript. But we would call it as a name copper 2 ions. And that's what's in the solution. All of the copper ions that are in solution are copper 2. And that makes it look blue to us. Okay, now monosaccharides, as in general, any monosaccharide, but monosaccharides as a class or a category, are also called reducing sugars. And that's because they act as reducing agents. Remember the definition I just gave you. What happens to a reducing agent? Right, but what happens to the reducing agent? It gets oxidized, exactly. So reducing sugars get oxidized, which means they lose electrons, right? But that causes something else to gain the electrons, and therefore that something else gets reduced. Is that all clear? The thing that gets reduced is the copper ion. And the source of the electron, like I said just a bit ago, from the sugar, from the reducing sugar, a monosaccharide, is one of the four electrons that are being shared in that double bond of the carbonyl. And that's why it has to be a linear form, which only monosaccharides have. When the monosaccharides are hooked together in a disaccharide or a polysaccharide, they're locked into the ring form, and they don't have that available electron because they don't have that carbonyl group. Okay? Now think about what happens when one electron from the sugar gets transferred to copper 2 plus. What's it turn copper 2 plus into? Copper 1, right, which is Cu with a 1 plus. So copper is one of these examples of a metal that can form two different kinds of ions, depending how many electrons are lost or gained. Okay. Notice, though, by the way, well, what is happening to copper in that situation? When it goes from copper 2 to copper 1? It gains an electron, so and therefore, what's happening to it? It's being reduced. Right? The sugar is reducing it, that's why the sugar is a reducing agent. But notice that numerically it went from 2 to 1, so that's a reduction numerically. Okay, well anyway, the reason this works as a test with a visual result is that if you have copper 1 ions in solution instead of copper 2, it doesn't look blue at all, it looks brick red. That's if all of the ions, however many are there, are in copper 1 form. Now, it's possible that you have some monosaccharides in your test, right? But not enough to reduce all of the copper 2 ions in solution. So some of them, in that case, will be in copper 2 form. Some of them will be reduced into copper 1. and it'll be somewhere between blue and brick red. So it can be green, it can be yellow, there, you'll see that. And this is what I meant earlier when I said even though it's a qualitative test, it's more than just yes or no. You know, you can test two different solutions with monosaccharides in them, and you can tell that the brick one, red one, has more monosaccharides than the one that only turned it yellow, even though you can't put numbers to it. So it's relative abundance. Okay? In other words, there's not just positives to the test. There's weak positives, stronger positives, and a very strong positive if it goes all the way to brick red. All right, so is that all good? Now, the overall goal today is to figure out what is in three solutions you choose from here called unknown solutions. Unknown meaning the ingredients are unknown to you. You're trying to figure out using your tests what's in there. But you can't just jump to that part of it. You have to do some preliminary work to be able to know what a true negative looks like for each test and to know what a true positive looks like. You can't just go start using the test without knowing what the positives and negatives look like. So you have to do some preliminary tests with known solutions. The ones that you have in your white basket here are known because they're labeled. You know what's in them. Okay? And so you're going to have to do 9 introductory tests. There's 3 overall categories of tests, right? IKI, Biuret, and Benedict's. But for each of those tests, you're going to test it three different things. And what you choose, it's up to you. But you want it for each test. Choose from your unknown or from your knowns something that you know does not have any of the thing that test tests for. Because that will give you a true negative. And there you can see what a negative looks like that way. Okay? Then you pick something that you know has it so that you get a good positive to look at. And even though it has more than one additional line, you do at least one other thing from your knowns. Okay? So that's 3 for each of the 3 tests. That's 9 preliminary tests to get used to doing the tests. Then when you're done with that, you can come to the unknown bottles and just notice that there's 3 letters, A, B, and C, but there's A1 through A4, B1 through B4, and C1 through C4. Every one of them is different. So it doesn't matter which A, which B, and which C you choose, but make sure you write down which one you have, 1 through 4 for each. And don't choose 2 A's, choose any A, any B, and any C. Okay, write down which specific one you have, because when you make your determination, you're going to see whether you got it right with me. And I don't have these memorized. I'll have to look up the answers. Now, you're not completely blind going into this, because there is a table in the lab manual that gives you possible things that are in these solutions. And then it's just deductive reasoning. Based on the results of your tests, you figure out whether it could be one thing or another from that list. So after you do your 9 preliminary tests, which are with your known solutions, you're also going to have to do tests for each of these solutions. That's 9 more tests, because whatever A you choose, you're going to have to subject that to each of the 3 tests. You're going to have to test A for Benedict's, for IKI, for Biuret. Same with the B, same with the C for another 9. Everything clear? Okay, that's most of it. That'll take most of the time that required to do this. But just don't forget, you also have to do pH. And these 2 pH stations are identical, so just go to whichever one's not as crowded. Pretty straightforward. You're just testing thing with pH strips and looking them up. Ask me if you have any questions about that. But before I let you loose, you're dealing with chemicals today, including acid. So you need to take that seriously. And before you start, put on gloves and goggles and keep your goggles on the whole time while you're working on this stuff. It's best to work in at least pairs, or you could work as an entire table. But move around however you need to pair up with someone or hire.